Joining us this morning is Kiran Savage Sangwan, the executive director of the Pan-Ethnic Health Network, who talks about some of these experiences and the report that they've compiled. Good morning, Kiran.
Good morning. This is actually Carrie Sanders with CPEN.
Happy
to be with you this morning.
Okay, well, good to have that correction. Tell us a little bit about the background. What led to your decision to conduct this survey? Was it some anecdotal experiences of people that you were interacting with?
So we actually worked with our partners around the state to collect this information. I think, you know, we've worked on healthcare for a very long time, but it's not that often that we actually get to talk to real consumers and people who have experienced the system, tried to access healthcare, you know, within the past year. And so it was a really great opportunity for us to just hear firsthand what are people facing when they go to the doctor.
What are some of the barriers that folks do encounter?
Well, you know, I think for starters, what we experienced were real, at the very beginning, even just broad barriers to accessing care. So before you even get to the doctor, we heard stories of long wait times, both for appointments and at facilities, high out-of-pocket costs, especially for dental services, lack of access to specialty care and mental behavioral health. People have transportation barriers, especially in rural areas. And for folks whose language, primary language is not English, difficulty accessing interpretation. So that was kind of, you know, the initial findings. But then we, you know, found out more about how people actually experience communication with their providers and heard quite a bit about discrimination and stigma as well.
It's such a broad state with both rural and also with urban challenges. We, of course, here at Jefferson Public Radio broadcast out of Southern Oregon, but we cover a large geographical area of Northern California, much of it rural. Are there extra challenges that are faced by people who are in rural areas, separate and distinct from, you know, lack of access to maybe more refined medical care?
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of our groups is on the Central Coast, so not Northern California, but pretty far and from, you know, LA and major metropolitan areas. And one of the things that we heard was how difficult it is for folks to get to the doctor. It can take 2.5 hours to drive one way and drive back, only to see your doctor for, you know, 5 minutes. You know, people often feel rushed once they do get to the doctor. And one of our participants was saying it's almost not worth it. If you have a problem, you know, it's almost easier to Google it than to drive, you know, and take the whole day off from work to go see a doctor for a short discussion.
Are some of these issues related to insurance coverage? If somebody comes in seeking medical care and they don't have insurance, does that complicate whatever other issues they may have?
I'm sure it does. I think the folks that we talked with had all different types of insurance. So some were, you know, had commercial insurance. Some folks had public insurance. Other folks maybe went to community clinics or had to access care without insurance. And, you know, the experiences were all, you know, fairly similar. Without insurance, though, it's, you know, much longer wait times, a lot more difficult to find a provider and to get in to get care, because you're essentially going to the emergency room instead of your primary care doctor, or you know, you're likely showing up sicker to the doctor than without.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking this morning with Carrie Sanders, the Senior Policy Director at the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network. If you'd like to join our discussion, if you have a question, give us a call at 800-838-3760, or during the live broadcast, you can send an email to jx@jeffnet.org. I imagine that with the large population, and as I understand it, under California law, it's required to provide somebody who can serve as a translator or to help those who don't speak English as a first language. Is that difficult to find? California is so diverse in terms of its population.
You know, providers now have, and plans, you're right, health plans are required to provide access to interpreter services, as are facilities, and many of them have, trained providers on staff, or if not, you can, there are provider or interpreter services that you can access by phone. But I think what was maybe not surprising, but what we learned was, most people are just not informed that they have that right. And so one woman in our group, in our focus group, talked about calling her, she would call her provider in Spanish to confirm her appointment. And when she showed up, the provider would speak to her in English without ever really no one ever really asked her, would you like an interpreter? Would you prefer an interpreter? I think the systems should be in place, and they are legally required. Oftentimes, people just are not made aware that that is their right.
For those who are participating in this and trying to get this particular particular area of care for themselves, are there things that they can do immediately to try to educate themselves about what some of their options are? Are there any resources set up, community centers, or anything like that?
So that's a great question. We have partners, around the state that work with, communities from all types of populations. So, I would definitely direct folks to some of those groups. For example, we work really closely with Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund. They ran one of our focus groups, and I know they, provide lots of resources for folks with disabilities. Some of the groups that we work with throughout the state also work specifically with specific populations, Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Los Angeles, the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California. So all of those, I think, are great resources. Also, in California, the Department of Managed Health Care, has information on their website about people's, rights to interpreter services, and other information as well. So I think those are good places to start. We also do have laws that require, health plans and providers to post this information. So when you go to a hospital or you go, online to look at a insurance, this information is supposed to be available, but it's often, the disconnect is when people show up at the provider's office. It's important that people just understand what their rights are and know that they can ask for these services.
We've touched on this a little bit, but as I was looking at your website, it mentions how the system is very confusing for a lot of people. And I was just thinking about that, kind of giving that some thought last night. If you're born in America and English is your first language and you have some kind of health insurance, et cetera, it's still confusing and difficult. And I'm trying to imagine what that must be like for people who have some special needs or are facing discrimination. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I would say that's a great question. Oftentimes, what we find for the communities that we work with. There, you know, if communities of color and persons with disability are facing these issues, it's very likely that, you know, everyone is facing these issues. And so, you know, it's just that it's exacerbated with the communities that we work with. So, you know, raising the difficulties that folks face, I think, can benefit everyone. Some of the things that we noted in particular, though, you know, provider directories being inaccurate and outdated, health plan support lines are really dreadful and not very helpful. People talked about having to wait, you know, for a long time to get help from their insurance company and basically just giving up. Documents, you know, and such as handbooks and billing are really hard to read. And oftentimes, you know, people's eligibility, when it shifts, it can lead to unpredictable lapses in coverage. So those were, you know, some of the types of things that, you know, we heard. And these are things that can affect everyone.
Are there some examples that you have in some of the research that you did of communities, hospitals, or medical care facilities that are doing a good job or setting an example for others right now?
You know, there were a couple of examples. I think one in particular, you know, we spoke with folks from the LGBTQ, you know, plus community, and, you know, one person mentioned how they really appreciated when they went to their provider, the provider, they felt that the provider did treat them with respect, and when they learned that, you know, this person was a gay man, suggested that there's another provider who sees, you know, a lot of gay men, and would this person be interested in, you know, working with this other provider. So that kind of, you know, really getting to, taking time to get to know the person and really understand, you know, what their needs are and what they might, you know, what might be appropriate or helpful for them. That's the kind of care that I think people really respond to. I also think people just want to be seen, you know, as a whole person. And, you know, if you have a disability, you want to be seen, you know, as someone with who has holistic needs. And so, you know, when providers acknowledge that, you know, a person is not just their illness or their disability, that can have a huge impact as well.
Well, I was reading about that as well, that sometimes people develop these stereotypes. If they see someone, for example, who's in a wheelchair, they may not realize that that person may have an active sexual life or other aspects, and so they start to put them into a box, so to speak, in how their treatment is approached. With this report that you've developed so far and what you've done, what's the next step? Where are you going to go with this information?
So, you know, part of our timing in doing this is really, you know, to try to take these recommendations and, I mean, take these findings and use them to come up with some concrete recommendations for the state, especially as we're thinking about our state, you know, waiver with our Medicaid program. We also have, you know, Cover California, which is our state marketplace, looking at their contract changes for 2022. So I think this is a really opportune time right now to, you know, bring some of these issues to the forefront, share them, and, you know, try to influence conversations about how care is delivered. I think one of the things that we've been looking at is actually some of the models in Oregon, in particular around, you know, primary care homes and, you know, thinking about how we can really put invest and put more resources into, you know, that first touch that providers have, so that people can feel really understood and seen. We also, you know, will want to include some training for providers as well about some of these issues. So I think there's a number of different, you know, ways to go in terms of recommendations, but we're looking forward to engaging in those conversations.
Were there any surprises in this research that you did, or anything that's made you think, okay, we're going to take a slightly different direction?
That's a great question. I think, you know, not so much surprises, but I think a little sobering that there's just, you know, so many broad issues that people face, even before you get to the provider. Some of these things that we talked about just getting in, you know, long wait times or just getting in to see the doctor, and, you know, how I think, you know, people still, even when you have health insurance, you know, folks feel, it seems like, just so, you know, I don't want to say demoralized, but it can be so difficult just getting in to get that care. So, you know, I think our, you know, for us, it's just very sobering to hear that and realize, you know, we have a long ways to go to really, you know, make sure that we're treating people and getting folks in on that first touch and really seeing people, the full person for what they need.
A question here, how do we better listen to people who are consumers or patients? And I'm using the word we in a pretty broad sense.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been a lot of studies and different, you know, types of training that folks can, you know, for providers. I think, you know, it's really important. I mean, at the end of the day, there's a lot of talk about implicit bias training and how important that can be. I think, you know, none of us like to think that we, you know, hold these types of biases, but it you know, oftentimes we just do, or they come out in certain situations. And so, you know, there are great trainings and important trainings around implicit bias, around trauma that I think are really important, that everybody, particularly, you know, providers who are interacting with folks do, and so that they can understand, you know, what am I seeing, both in terms of, you know, trauma from my patients, but also what types of implicit, you know, biases do I have, and how can I try to overcome those?
We have been talking this morning with Carrie Sanders. Carrie is the Senior Policy Director for CPEN in California. Recent study looking at some of the ways that certain groups of people that are disadvantaged in one form or another have not been allowed access to particular healthcare facilities or services. Carrie, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.